Thank you, Karen, for leading us in singing this morning. Aaron and family are, like so many families, enjoying fun away at spring break. Yesterday morning, it was great to see two buses packed full of students headed down to camp. I'm headed there after, this may be a short sermon, I'm headed down there after the service today. And of course, we got folks in Alaska and people scattered to the four winds because of spring break, but I'm really glad that you are here. And those of you who are watching by live stream or TV, thank you so much. It is a real honor to have you join us each week. A few weeks ago, I realized the difference between envy and admiration. Every year, at least until this year, the organizers of the Rocket City Marathon have invited me to come and do a devotion, as there are people from all over the country that gather here in Huntsville for the Rocket City Marathon, the first Sunday of December. I get to do a devotion about 6:30 on that Sunday morning, and then at right about 6:45, we're out there on the platform at the start line, and they let me say a prayer for the runners. Well, this past December, the first Sunday of December, I was there at the Rocket City Marathon at the start line. It was drizzling rain, and it was cold. And I looked out at those hundreds of runners in the street with the numbers pinned to their shirts and their cool running shoes, and I thought, you know, I admire them, but I don't envy them. I was about to get in my car and drive over here to a warm building to you all, and I really thought, I admire them. I don't envy them, and I had that thought. You know, that's the distinction, the difference between admiration and envy. To admire is to say, boy, that what you have is cool, but I don't want it. That's so I admire you. I don't envy you. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But that brings us to the 10th commandment. It's hard to believe we're already here. Now, next week, I'm going to try to wrap things up with an afterword. But today, we've come to the 10th commandment, as you've already heard from Miss Kristen, is about coveting. By the way, if you would get your worship guides out right past the title and the text, there are some, there's an outline, some passages I'd like you to follow. And our verse for today is Exodus 20:17, the 10th commandment. And it says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor." To covet is different from envy. I stood there at the start line and said, "I admire, but I don't envy these folks." But to covet is different from envy. Coveting is envy on steroids. To envy is to be disappointed that we don't have something, maybe even a resentment over someone else has. But coveting is wanting what someone else has. Have you ever been out to eat and you've already ordered, maybe you already have your food, and the waiter or waitress comes by with a dish and puts it on the table next to you, and you think, boy, I wish I'd ordered that. Martha Hope wrote, "When dining out in public, it fills me with dismay to see the dinner that I want on someone else's tray." Well, that's coveting. It's one, but it's not just somebody's dinner. It's wanting his house and her money. It's wanting her achievements or his accolades. It's wanting his friends or her family. It's thinking that by right, that should be mine. It's one thing to be disappointed. It's one thing to be disappointed that you didn't get that job that you really wanted. It's another thing, it's coveting, to think it's all so unfair and to secretly hope that the one who did get the job fails, maybe even undermining him or her to try to ensure that he or she fails. It's one thing to wish I'd gotten that role at, that position as the starting quarterback on the football team. It's quite another thing. It's coveting to hate the coach and to hope that the one who did get the starting job as quarterback gets hurt. It's one thing to wish I had gotten that role, that lead role in the play. It's another thing to quit the play altogether when I don't get the role and to criticize the director and all the crew, the cast. To envy is one thing, but coveting is like envy on steroids. It's a grudge. It's a deep resentment. It's an unhealthy, a self-destructive obsession with what someone else has. Now, before I move on, it's not wrong to be inspired by someone, to see someone that has done well or has something good and be inspired by that, to say, you know, if he or she can do it, I can do it. Well, that's a good thing. Or it's not a bad thing to admire what somebody has. You know, it's easy to admire folks, especially with social media. You know, we see them, they're always going on vacation and they're always getting a promotion and their kids are always the valedictorians and they're always dressing up in their tuxedos and then their evening gowns and you know, our life seems so humdrum in comparison. It's easy to admire, not a bad thing to admire other folks, but it's quite another. When that admiration and that inspiration becomes resentment, when admiration and inspiration become resentment, and when that resentment festers like a sore, when it's an ongoing, unhealthy obsession with what somebody else has, then that is the sin of coveting. Coveting makes small people out of us. Have you ever heard the word Schadenfreude? It's a really interesting word. Schadenfreude comes from the German. Schaden means suffering and Freude means joy. It's that private joy we get from somebody else's suffering. It's that inner delight we have when someone we don't like, maybe a rival, stumbles and falls and something bad happens to them. Take Billy Ray, for example. Billy Ray is a hunter, and he's got some hunting dogs, but his hunting dogs aren't as good as his neighbor's hunting dogs, and his neighbor's always bragging, so obnoxious about those hunting dogs. And one day, Billy Ray's out in the yard, and his neighbor comes over, and he's bragging again. He says, I'm going to take my hunting dogs to the hunting dog contest, and I bet you they get a blue ribbon. And Billy Ray says, boy, I hope so too. And then he turns around and rolls his eyes, and he really doesn't hope they get a blue ribbon. And then Billy Ray sees his neighbor in the yard later, and he asks him, how did your dogs do in the contest? His neighbor's so mad, he said, it was fixed, it was rigged, the judges were terrible, they didn't even get any ribbons. And Billy Ray says, well, that's too bad, but inside he's kind of glad. And then his neighbor says, and the worst thing is, I have one of my best dogs, the vet says is real sick and might not make it. And Billy Ray says, that's too bad. But inside, he's even kind of glad that his neighbor's dog is sick. That's coveting. And then there's Sally Jean. Sally Jean has been in middle management for a long time. Sally Jean does a good job in her role in middle management. And then there's a position in upper management. And Sally Jean applies for that. And she gets an interview, and then a few weeks after that, an email goes out to all the applicants, and it says, congratulations to the one who got the job, and it wasn't Sally Jean, and Sally Jean is so mad, she says it was fixed, and then sometime later, she hears that the one who did get the job is struggling. The people above her are unhappy. The people beneath the one who got the job, they're unhappy. And the one who got the job, that lady, her marriage is struggling and her health is suffering under the stress. And Sally Jean, every time she hears something like that, she wants every gory detail because there's a part of her that delights in the suffering of the one whose job she covets. Coveting make small people out of us. Coveting will cause us to hurt people. Have you ever heard of the crabs in a barrel mentality? I don't know a whole lot about crabs, but they say that when crabs are in a barrel and one of the crabs is about to crawl out, it looks like the crab is going to advance. The other crabs will reach up and grab that crab and pull the crab back down. We we tend to do that when one of our peers is about to distinguish himself or herself, about to, you know, do something really good. We get jealous, we get envious, we covet his potential advancement, and we try to cut him down and bring him down and pull her down back to our level. Coveting makes small people out of us. Coveting will cause us to hurt people. Coveting causes us to do bad stuff. It's easy to understand how coveting could lead to the breaking of any of the other Ten Commandments, like stealing or bearing false witness or adultery. It's easy to understand how coveting causes us to do bad stuff. Let's imagine the story from 2 Samuel 11, the story of David and Bathsheba. Some of you know the story, and I'm going to tell you what happened, but first let's look at a couple of other options. So David, number one, we'll call this one recognition and retreat. So David walks out on his roof, his veranda. And now some of you have been there. The David's palace was at the top of the mountain in ancient Jerusalem, the top of the hill, really. And you could see down to all the houses below. So David innocently walks out on his roof, his veranda, and he looks down, and there's beautiful Bathsheba. And he sees her. He can't help that. And he finds her attractive. He can't help that either. But he recognizes that there's real danger here. So he recognizes the danger and he retreats back into the palace. Now, that's one option, but that's not what happened. The second option is envy. So David walks out innocently onto his roof, his veranda. He looks down there and he sees beautiful Bathsheba. He sees her. He can't help that. He's attracted to her. He can't help that. But this time he lingers and he lusts and he envies her husband Uriah. And David says, boy, I wish my wives were young and beautiful like Bathsheba. He envies Uriah, but there's a check in his spirit and he knows that's wrong. And so he turns around and he walks back into the palace. That was the second option, but that's not what happened either. So David innocently walks out on his roof, his veranda. He sees Bathsheba. He can't help that. He's attracted to her. He can't help that either. But he looks and he lingers and he lusts and he envies Uriah, her husband. And he says, I wish my wives were young and beautiful like Bathsheba. But then he sends for her. And she comes. He's the king. And they have an inappropriate relationship, and now she's going to have a baby, and David sends Uriah, her husband, off to battle where he will surely be killed. See, coveting is like, and that's what happened, by the way, coveting is like envy on steroids. It makes us do bad. When we have that, when admiration and inspiration become resentment, and it festers, and it's that deep grudge, it makes us small. It causes us to hurt people. Coveting causes us to do really bad things. When we covet, there's always something deeper. There's always something deeper going on. There's always something underneath the coveting. Years ago, I sat next to a man on a plane. We were in first class. That's back when you all were flying me down here every weekend and I accumulated so many points with Delta, they were always bumping me up to first class. Now I'm down there with the common folks, but I used to be in first class. I sat down in first class next to a well-dressed man. What do you do? What do you do? And he said, mine is not a happy job. He was a high-powered attorney who flies around the country and helps well-to-do families settle estates. As he explained it, when the second parent has died and only the siblings are left and they're now fighting over the estate and they're well-to-do, he goes and helps them try to settle things. And he said to me, you know, it's almost never about the fine china. It's always about something deeper. This is how he said the conversations sometimes go. You might have had more boyfriends than I had, and you might have gotten my boyfriend in the 10th grade, but you're not getting the antique furniture. Or you might have done better in your career than I did, but you're not getting the house. It's always something deeper. We're back to where we were last week when we talked about stealing. And I said, stealing's always about something deeper. It's about this deep and pervasive discontent in our culture. where we're not grateful for or contented with what we have. Look at what Paul wrote. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. The Bible itself calls us to contentment. The Bible makes this countercultural call to contentment that says, learn to be content with what you have. The Bible calls us to pray that God will provide for our needs and then to be content with what He provides. Coveting is rooted in discontent. Coveting is like envy on steroids. It's that deep resentment that rots within us. It's that self-destructive greed and discontent. And it's not just a bad thing, it's the sin of coveting. Here's the deal. No matter how much we have, someone else is always going to have more. No matter how well we're doing, somebody else is always going to be doing better. No matter how well the kids are performing, somebody else's kids are always going to be performing better. No matter how well the business is doing, somebody else's business is going to be doing better. No matter how well our portfolio is performing, somebody else's portfolio is always going to be performing better. Comparing and coveting are always losing exercises. Comparing and coveting are always losing exercises. Let me illustrate that. One of my favorite basketball players ever is David Robinson, the Admiral, as he's called. David Robinson grew up in a military family, went to the Naval Academy, and was a basketball star at the Naval Academy. He graduated in 1987, and he went active duty in the Navy. 2 years later, he joined the Naval Reserves, and he joined the San Antonio Spurs in the National Basketball Association, the NBA. David Robinson played for 14 years in the NBA for the Spurs, and they won 2 national championships. And he was named Most Valuable Player at least 1 year and named All-Star for multiple years. He played on the U.S. Olympic team. And David Robinson had it all. In 1998, David Robinson made $12,390,000. $12,390,000. And that's back when $12 million was a lot of money, you know. $12,390,000. Look down at your outline, and I want you to read along with me the words of David Robinson. He said, "Here I am with 5 cars, 2 houses, and more money than I ever thought I'd have. What more could I ask for? But there's Michael Jordan. He has more than I do. And boy, I'd like to have some of the things he has." Remember what I said? I said comparing and coveting are always losing exercises. Because even if you got $12,390,000 this year, Michael Jordan made more. There's always a Michael Jordan. But David Robinson continued. Keep reading there. "What I had should have been plenty. But no matter how much I had, it didn't seem like enough. Because material things can't satisfy your deepest needs. That's when I started to realize I needed the Lord." And I want to get out that hymn we sang a moment ago. "My worth is not in what I own, not in the strength of flesh and bone, but in the costly wounds of love. My worth is not in skill or name, in win or lose, in pride or shame, but in the blood of Christ that flowed at the cross." And that last stanza, I love this line. "Two wonders here that I confess, my worth and my both my worth. What a beautiful paradox, my worth and my unworthiness, my value fixed, my ransom paid at the cross. So David Robinson is a deeply devoted follower of Jesus because there came a point in his life when he realized that $12,390,000 a year is just not enough, because when he compared himself, at least to Michael Jordan, and coveted what he had, David Jordan was left with a profound emptiness. For comparing and coveting are always losing exercises, as preachy as it sounds. You have heard it from me before. Only Jesus can satisfy your soul, and only He can change your heart and make you whole. He'll give you peace you never knew, sweet love and joy and heaven too. Because $12,390,000 won't do it. For only Jesus can satisfy your soul. 68 is the hymn that we're going to sing. Our church is blessed. Over the last several weeks, every Sunday somebody has come to join their lives, their hearts, their resources, their gifts, their time and talents with us. Maybe this will be the day that you will come. We sing to wait. We sing to invite. And some of us are going to be down here looking for you if you will come. 68, let's stand, please, and sing.